Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
This report continues, quote, there have been discussions amongst the SEC, Big Ten, the college football playoff, and the schools related to possibly postponing the January 11 title game, sources said. Though, a final decision on the situation has yet to be reached, end quote. All right, so that's potentially very serious. The CFP had already designated January 18th as the makeup date for the championship game, but moving the game is pretty close to the last thing that anybody wants to do. That's a given. Then again, if Ohio State is in fact potentially without an entire position group, how do you just ignore that? How do you just plow ahead and play that game if they're missing an entire position group? So nothing has been moved yet. The Buckeyes did practice yesterday, and Ohio State AD Gene Smith told Dennis Dodd, quote, we continue to follow the same protocols as we have all season. Our intent is to play January 11, end quote. All right, so that said, that has not stopped the lava and the red hot takes from pouring in. And the conspiracy theory among some Alabama fans is that the Buckeyes are faking. They're faking the COVID situation in order to buy time for Buckeye quarterback Justin Fields so he can recover from that injury that he suffered against Clemson. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Did I say Alabama fans? I meant Nick Saban's daughter. Yeah, that's right. Kristen Saban Cetus. She hopped on Twitter yesterday and she thumbed out this molten lava. Quote, if you're not confident to play, then say it. I call BS on the COVID cases. They're just worried about their QB and want him to have more time to heal. If he's hurt, put in your backup. You didn't see us postpone the rest of the season to wait for Waddle. Bye. End of tweet. I mean, holy crap, Kristen. There are takes, and then there's that take. I'm not sure what's more wild. The take itself for the fact that it came from Nick Saban's daughter. Are you kidding me about that? Normally, I would say that kids are off limits on this show. Like, we always crack who deserves to get cracked. But kids generally do not deserve to get cracked because they're kids. But Kristen's no kid now. A daughter, yes, but not a kid. She's 24 years old. She's not some youngster who somehow grabbed Pop's blower, jumped on Twitter, and looked to get loose. She's old enough to know better. And her old man has been banging on about this very thing for years, which makes it even more insane. I mean, of all people, how is Nick Saban's next of kin not aware of the dangers and pitfalls of social media? Her pops never says anything about anything, unless it's to complain about Alabama students leaving blowouts early, or members of the media asking slightly challenging questions. And yet his daughter is the one blowing up Twitter with some kind of heat. I mean, when he heard that, when the old man heard that, he probably spit his little Debbie oatmeal cream pie all over his TV while watching the Weather Channel. Can you imagine all the time that Saban has spent talking to his players and coaching about never, ever, ever say anything about anything, and whatever you do, avoid the rat poison. Only to have his own daughter order a truckload of rat poison. And for no reason, right? It wasn't like somebody reached out to her to get her reaction to a potential COVID outbreak at Ohio State. Man, she just fired it off. Nobody asked her. Nobody wanted her take. She just went with it. And let's be clear about something else. Just because it's a hot take does not mean it's a good take. In fact, it's a terrible take. It's one of the wackest takes ever. I mean, I can't believe that we're still having this conversation. We're in the middle of a pandemic. If you tweet anything that ever includes the phrase, quote, I call BS on the COVID cases, then you've gone full dope. Anything that involves somebody calling BS on the COVID cases is going to be flat out moronic. Like, in case you haven't noticed, no matter what you think, no matter what you believe, let me give you a fact or two. There are thousands of people dying every single day from COVID, and you're acting like this is something that a football team would use as an excuse to postpone a game. I mean, really? How does your brain go to that point? And then how does it say, hey, you know what? This is a smart take, and it's true, and I need to tweet this out so the entire world can see it. I mean, are you seriously suggesting that Ohio State would fake a COVID outbreak to get the game delayed? Like, where in your head does an idea like that pop up? Who the hell thinks something like that, much less rushes to their blower to thumb it out for the world to see? Ohio State has had COVID issues all year long. This is nothing new. And just as I said, when Michigan had their outbreak before the Ohio State game, I highly, highly, highly doubt anybody is going to fake a viral outbreak to get out of playing a football game, much less get out of playing the national championship game. And by the way, if there actually is a delay, and we don't know that there will be at this point, but wouldn't that give you more time for Jalen Waddle to get ready to play? And wouldn't that be a good thing for Alabama? Besides, if this Bama team is as good as everybody thinks it is, don't you want to play and beat a full-strength Ohio State team? Would you rather face one that's potentially missing a position group? But none of that stopped Kristen from banging out that incredible molten lava. I haven't seen the child of a sports icon tweet out something that regrettable since Marcus Jordan posted a pic of his own junk, deleted it, and then came back with a legendary, anyway, what's poppin' Twitter? Hashtag Happy Sunday. She didn't go with a, anyway, what's poppin' Twitter? Happy Tuesday to clear out all the wreckage. Instead, what she did, she actually doubled down. And then she chased that first tweet with, quote, oops, did I say something you didn't like that you would say if it were turned around on us? End quote. I mean, again, amazing, right? Go with a really dumb tweet and then effectively chase it with a triggered tweet right after that. And again, all of this is coming from Nick Saban's daughter. Like, if you gave me a list of the kids, of coaches who would be thumbing out ludicrous tweets a few days before the national championship, anybody with Saban in their name would be dead last on my list. But here we are. Here the bleep we are.
Here we are. Here the
So after doubling down, of course, she doubled back and deleted both her tweets, then locked her account, then deleted the account, but not before coming back with the following apology. Quote, the tweet I posted earlier this evening was uncalled for and hurtful. I made a huge mistake and I apologize. In a moment of frustration, I let my anger get the best of me and I acted before thinking. I sincerely regret my choice of reckless words. In no way did I intend to undermine the seriousness of the global pandemic, and my heart goes out to all those it's affected. The health and safety of others is first and foremost, and I pray that we all can find peace soon. I am ashamed and embarrassed. I hope you can forgive me. End quote. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I appreciate the apology, kinda, sorta. She owned what she said. She was rightfully ashamed and embarrassed. Like, I'm not sure what she was so angry about with the possibility of a COVID outbreak at Ohio State that she lost her mind, but that's a different matter. Like, if you're saying us when it comes to the Alabama football program and you hear news about Ohio State maybe or potentially having a COVID outbreak, your thoughts and concerns ought to be about the health and safety of them, not how it's going to be a way to cheat the system and fake an illness during a pandemic. Oh, one more note. I can't wait to see how Nick responds to the first question that he gets about his daughter's tweet. I really hope that he gives a real answer and doesn't just mumble and mutter and grumble about it. What I'm saying is, I hope he lights her up like he does any media member who asks a semi-hard question or any fan that dares leave early before the end of a game. Or anybody who might suggest that he's going to be the next Alabama coach.
I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. I shouldn't even have to comment on this. I think I've said this over and over and over again.
In other words, I hope the guy surprises me, even though I know he won't. Here's hoping that Miss Terry doesn't go accusing the Buckeyes of faking a COVID outbreak to try to buy themselves some more time. I think my favorite response, though, was former Ohio State backup quarterback Cardale Jones. He went with this tweet, quote, Sure, you want to face another backup from OSU? You know what happened last time, right? End quote. Nice job, see? 2015 Sugar Bowl, college football playoff semi. Number 4, Ohio State 42. Number 1, Alabama 35. Cardell started and was the third string, of course, behind JT Barrett and Braxton Miller that season. That's his best work since his, quote, "we ain't come to play school" tweet. And that's his best work ever. In fact, that's the best work on Twitter ever. "We ain't come to play school." Hey, you want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back that you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit on how much you can earn. I mean, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you consider all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So, when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report. Limitations do apply. Jared Allen. Jared, it's good to have you in the jungle. What's up? How are you?
Oh, great to be back. Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm great, and it's good to have you back. So let me ask you, the finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2021 were announced. You are one of the finalists. What was your reaction, Jared, when you heard that news?
Man, I just humbled. Like, honestly, it's one of those things where, you know, in the beginning of your career, you don't ever imagine that it's going to be there. I mean, it's what you work for. Obviously, any competitor, or true competitor, I should say, you know, one that wants to be great, I mean, that's, you're shooting for greatness. You're shooting to be the best at what you do. And, you know, all these years later, to kind of have a culmination of recognized in a group of amazing athletes and guys that have played this game at the highest level, it's just, it's humbling, it's honored, and, man, it's just cool. I think, you know, last night watching the little program, Charles Woodson put it best. You know, it's just living in that moment and enjoying it, and, you know, we'll see what happens at the end.
We're talking to Jared Allen. You know, Jared, you mentioned the class and the guys you're being mentioned with. You're one of only 4 players in this year's class to be a finalist in your first year of eligibility. So how much does it mean to be listed with all of these other elite players?
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's cool. I mean, I joke all the time. I say, well, if I got to be an asterisk in Peyton Manning's Hall of Fame class, I guess I'll do it.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just cool. I mean, especially I got to compete against a lot of those guys. Obviously, the first time guys I got to compete against, and some of the other guys, you know, were at the tail end of their careers as I was coming in. And so it's awesome to go back and just kind of, you know, watch some of the highlights and stuff like that and see the guys playing and just watching great football. I mean, every single one of those guys that had in the prime of their career were very impactful, right? They were the guys on the team that were on every single board that you had to account for, and so to be listed with them, it's amazing.
We're talking to Jared Allen. So, Jared, right now on our TV simulcast on CBS Sports Network, we're showing a bunch of still photos of you in your various uniforms, all with the number 69. I want to ask you about that because there's a story that when you first got in the league, you were given that number 69 and you weren't that happy about it. And one of the reasons you weren't happy was because an offensive lineman on the team also had that number. Like, so when you first got that number, how did you feel?
Yeah, it was terrible. First of all, I came in from college. I was already mad in high school. I was number 1. And then I was already mad in college. They gave me 41 and I kept that when I wanted to stay number 1, you know. And then I got into the league and they gave me a, you know, 69, which, you know, again, I was like, man, that's just a dumpy old lineman's number. And we had another old lineman on the team who, you know, he was like free agent, you know, RFA or college free agent. And I'm like, now I'm the guy, you know, that's got, you know, somebody else, they already gave my number. So now I'm competing to see if I can beat out somebody with a new number. So yeah, I wasn't thrilled about it. I was looking forward to changing it. But then Bob Carmelowitz, obviously made the team, and he came up to me and he said, you know, our equipment manager asked if I wanted to change my number. And Bob Carmelowitz came up to me and he said, you know what? So you're an old school player and that's an old school number. You keep that number and you make it cool. And I said, all right, done and done. So that's kind of how it played out, and it worked out all right.
I like it. It did work out real well. Jared Allen's joining us. You know, Jared, I would say that if I didn't know you the way I know you, I would say, man, you're hyped up. You sound great. You feel great. You just got some good news. But the fact of the matter is, this is the way you've always approached it. This is the way you've always shown up. I mean, from the outside, it seems like your career was not just so much about dominating on the field, but you always seemed to have a great time while you were out there and not only competed at the highest level, but you were actually an entertainer as well. Like, how would you describe your mindset when you took the field on Sundays?
oh man, pure bliss, right? You know, when I was younger, my dad always told me football is one of the few sports you can beat people up and not go to jail for. So, you know, I always took that as an approach. But more importantly, I just, you know, you work so hard during the week. You know, Sunday, you know, I don't think the fans truly realize it's more of a release for players. I mean, the grind of getting there, the countless hours of practice, beating the head against the wall, Wednesdays and Thursdays, you know, and you finally get to go out, you know, and put it on display. And then I also knew, like, you know, why we got to do what we got to do. I also knew, you know, who paid the bills, really. I mean, if you weren't selling tickets and fans couldn't show up, you know, people were spending their hard-earned money to come watch me play. I might as well, you know, let them know that I enjoy what I do. And so for me, having fun was the only way to play. And it just, you know, it is exciting, especially when you're having success. And I think people appreciated just my genuine attitude. You know, if we lost, I was pissed off. When we won, I was excited. You know, I think football is that, you know, sports in general is a connection between people that, you know, they come out to watch certain people play. And if you, like I said, if people are going to spend their hard-earned money to watch me play, I'm sure going to let them know that I appreciate what I'm doing. And I want to give them a show when we're there.
He's Jared Allen, a Hall of Fame finalist, joining us once again. Jared, this is a great story from your time with the Vikings when you were filling in as a long snapper against the Falcons. You thought that Atlanta's Ray Edwards had a history of running into the long snapper. How did you handle that situation?
I told him, I gave him a fair warning. I said, "Do you line up over me?" He said, "Hey," he said, "Jay, I'm going to run you over." I said, "You run me over, I'm going to punch you square in your nuts, bro." And he ran me over, so I punched him square in his nuts.
Incredible. So how did that go down? What did he say after the fact? Like, I mean, you
he was laughing about it. I said, "Hey, I warned you." I said, "I warned you." I said, "Of course, they caught it on camera. It was a good time."
That is a good time. Jared Allen is joining us. And Jared, when you look back on your career then, is there, I mean, with all the sacks, is there a particular sack that you got or maybe one sack that you didn't get that you think about the most?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think about all the ones I missed. I can count, you know, the countless ones that I missed. You know, my career goal was to get to 150, and you know, couple back injuries my last 2 years, blow my L5 out, kind of hindered that. But so I always count the ones I missed. I mean, every single one I can think of. But you know, the one that hurts the most, I was actually just talking about with someone this morning. Every time I see Aaron, he's still last year. Man, I can't believe they didn't give me that sack. So in the year I had 22, you probably don't know if people remember, but anyway, Aaron got the ball, kind of ran into Newhouse, and he dropped the ball. I picked it up, started to run out of the pocket. I tackled him, sack. They gave me the sack that game. On Wednesday, went back and review, and because of the rule change back in, like, I think it was like 08 or something like that, a muff becomes a team sack. So they counted it as a muff, and they took the sack from me, and it became a team sack, not my sack. That was my 23rd sack, and so... That's the one that always sticks, and I just, breaks my heart.
That hurts, man. And you're a team guy, but I know that hurts. We're talking to Jared Allen. And Jared, something else I've always appreciated about you is you've got a lot of love for the current players. Like Myles Garrett, for instance, is a guy that you've taught as being special. What do you like so much?
I was that I would watch that thing pertain to my skill set. Guys like DeMarcus Ware, guys like Julius Peppers. Who were obviously phenomenal players, right? And that's what he reminds me of, that Julius Peppers type player. I mean, the guy physically, him and Daniil Hunter are probably my two favorite to watch on the few chances I watch football. But his body type and the ability to use that body, I mean, to be that big, that powerful, and that quick is rare. And he seems to have that mindset of, you know, that he wants to be great. He continually puts up number when, you know, I know he is been in and out of with health stuff sometimes, but I respect guys that can dominate. I respect guys that are physically gifted and understand that gift and then are able to use it for the purpose of what they're doing, right? And so you know, your body's like that, you're that big, you're that quick, you're that able, and technique like Daniil Hunter, that dude, he really knows how to use his length. That's a long length. Like, heck, he might even be taller than me. And when I watch him play, he knows how to use his hands. He knows how to use. So I really respect technique. And you know, with a guy like Myles Garrett, you know, you look at him and you're just like, man, that dude has that. You know, you can't train what you know, his size and his strength and stuff like that, and his ability to get to the quarterback. And you can just, and it, I think for me, I look at it too. And I look at, you know, the way these young kids move, and it's like, if they're this great, you know, imagine what they're going to be like in year 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 when the mental side really starts to kick in and they understand even more how to use their body. I mean, that could be dangerous.
talking to Jared Allen. You know, Jared, because you and I spoke throughout your career, I'm always curious, like, what it's like to make that transition to life after football for you or for anybody else. It seems like you've made a really nice transition after football between work and the work that you do with Homes for Wounded Warriors. You spent a lot of quality time with your family. You've mixed in some curling. So what's retirement, or at least the next phase of your life, been like? How is your life these days?
Oh, life's great. For me, like, retirement was, or I should say football to me was, I don't want to say it was a means to an end, but I always understood that, you know, even if I were to have played 15 years, right, you know, I chose to shut it down after 12. And I always knew that, you know, that's an incredibly long career, and it's a great career, but in the scheme of life, it's very small. So I always understood that at some point football was going to be a means to an end. And, you know, I think we've talked about this on your show before, you know, as I got older and my priorities shifted, you know, as I met my wife and as I became a father and as I, you know, got more back into my faith and you know, football slid down on that list. And it probably seems like, how does that benefit you when the thing you're doing slides down your priority list? It focused my life, right? It focused me on what I was doing and what I was for. And I try to tell guys all the time, like, if you're not enough without football, you'll never be enough with it. I know it's kind of cliche, but it's the truth. And so for me, my identity didn't lie in what I was, in what I did. My identity lied in the foundations of what made me a human being, and constantly trying to be a better man, kind of, you know, be a better Christian, be a better husband, be a better father. And those, I think, you know, as a competitor, you know, in all aspects of my life, I always want to be improving all the time. And so, you know, that's just, you know, my mentality from football. I always wanted to be the best, always wanted to improve on the year before. You know, that just transferred over to life. And, you know, I like to have fun. And, you know, I think for me too, I was able to play the game, you know, my way. I was one of the few guys that never got cut. Any trade was, you know, because I asked for it and I got to go where I wanted to go. So for me, there was no regrets, and I left it on the field. And I think unfortunately circumstances play differently for some guys, but for me, you know, I knew where I was at in life. I knew when I was going to retire. I was smart enough with my money to know that I was good coming out of it. And I got, you know, I got to, and now I get to live a life and understand that it's not necessarily about me anymore. Right? And get to go through the next chapter. So now I just want to conquer that next chapter and raising kids and having fun. That's it. We just try to have fun too. And then, you know, opportunities of curling presented itself. I took a bet and was like, hey, let's jump in. And then, you know, of course, being a competitor, I wanted to be the best at that. So I dove headfirst into that. And then, you know, COVID put a pause on everything. But yeah, I mean, that's just kind of how I live my life is, you know, be present, focus on the now and what you're doing. And that's just kind of how I play it out. And I guess, listen, I know it's different for everybody, but that's the advice I give people is, you know,
I don't, where you're at. Jared, I don't think that's cliche at all. I love that. I think that's such a great message, and I love that. He's a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He is the founder of Jared Allen's Home for Wounded Warriors. He had an amazing NFL career, and now we'll wait and see. The next phase of life has already started. Jared, I appreciate you. I appreciate the relationship. It's always good to have you on this show. Congrats on the nomination, and I know we will do it again soon.
Absolutely, anytime. Always a pleasure. Appreciate you, bro.
Let's start with the social, the Twitter beefs and the email beefs. Romy, I have beef with the Arizona Cardinals. What an epic choke job this season. After starting off 6-3, lost to two backup QBs, just win one of those games, and we are in the playoffs. Cliff Dingleberry is not a head coach. He's not even a good OC. Call some better plays, your so-called offensive guru, Pete, pissed in Phoenix. It was a tough end of the year, I'm not going to lie. Critical year three for him. Dear Jim, my beef is with these companies that send you a survey every time you call them with a customer service issue. If I thank a rep for taking care of my cable or internet service, then I'm satisfied. Nothing more, nothing less. I don't need to have any more of my time wasted over such innocuous matters. Mike in KC. I agree with that. That is kind of annoying, right? Why do I have to fill out a questionnaire? Yeah, Jim, I got beef with John Elway getting a pay raise for underperforming. Where's my money? Regards, Rit.
Bring it on.
Michael in Oceanside. I mean, how do you know whether or not he's overpaid or underpaid? Rit is getting paid pretty much what he's worth. Rit might not think so. Trust me, he's getting paid what he's worth. It's Rit. Hey, Jim, my beef is with other beef jerky even being an option in stores. Why? War Old Trapper being the Rome of beef jerky. Greg in H-Town, he's right. That's so true. Why would any store carry any other brand of beef jerky? That's good beef. Hey, Rome, what's my beef? When people tell me to, quote, fly safe when I head to the airport, if that bird goes down with me in it, my family and friends won't say, we told him to be safe. I mean, what am I supposed to do to make it a safer flight? Jeff from PDX, also a solid beef. It's not like Jeff is flying the plane, right? Or servicing the plane, or maintaining the plane, or even a flight attendant on the plane. Rome, my beef is with early January birthdays. My birthday was Sunday. I wanted to grab beers with my buddies. Instead, I'm stuck with weight loss resolution guy and Hawk's stupid dryuary guys. I didn't care. I went and had a steak dinner, drank some bourbon, and crushed a brownie sundae. Chris no longer in St. Pete. War outside sales. War DoorDash gal being likes to fight gal. I'm going to try and get her. Good for you, man. Who needs dryuary? I mean, good for you if you partake in dryuary, like Hawk. But if your birthday is in January, man, get some. Send it. Get it. Get your bourbon. Get your steak. Get your brownie sundae. Aunt Mock Moda tweets, my beef are the clones that tweet the show at Jim Rome like you ask, but then add at Adam Hawk. Hey, losers. Hawk is Rome's tweet slap. He'll see it. It's a good point, Mock. Rome, I got a beef with the inefficient grocery bagger. I lined up the groceries how they should have been bagged. I don't need six bags when everything can fit in two. Matt in Dallas. Over the top TP tweets. Like, if there had been anybody but this guy, I would call him out. But knowing this guy and his brand, this makes sense. Over the top TP tweets. My beef is with knobs that rave about their new bidet and how awesome it is to use. This is America. Pony up some cash for good quality TP. That's that guy's brand. Good quality TP. At 541 Brown tweets, my beef is with the white window decals on minivans that depict the multiple numbers of spawn mom and dad squirted out after they went to Pound Town. Great. You're fertile. No one cares. Alvy's talking about you. Put that thing back up real quick. Squirted out. My beef is with the white window decals on minivans that depict the number, the multiple number of spawn mom and dad squirted out when they went to Pound Town. Great. You're fertile. No one cares. That's the winner so far. Yeah, Squirrel 2. My beef is with your video crew for showing the same 25 holiday cards and not posting mine. I emailed ours in the first week and it never appeared. Can we fix that? Can we hook up the squirrel? It's on TV right now. There you go, bro. You feel better. Yeah, there you are, too. You feel better now. There's your fam. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Apology accepted. This guy's handle, his Twitter handle is at DamnRit. Jaime, my beef is forgetting and leaving my mask in my sled every time I go to walk into a store. DamnRit. That guy's handle is DamnRit. DamnRit. At Towing Rockland tweets, my beef is with the old guy at the gym using a blow dryer to dry his junk. Come on, man. Beefs have to be real. They have to be about things that actually happen. It haunted 00 Horse. Jimmy, my beef is with Brian freaking Weber. I went to several McDonald's yesterday looking for a McRib, and they all said, sorry, sir, Brian Weber just rolled through here. Going back to yesterday, I've got a question. Does Weber pay for his McRibs with McRibs? Since he wants to be paid, not in money, but in McRibs. Let's go to the phones. 1-800-636-8686. That's the virtual, or I should say, social version of the Beeps. Let's go to the phones. We go to Toledo. Branson is in Toledo. Branson, what's going on? What's your beef?
Jim, my beef is with my coworkers who don't spray air freshener after they take a gigantic steaming dump. Like, seriously? It now feels like and smells like.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Yeah, I don't condone that. Really, Rome? Then why are you laughing at that? I don't know. Just know that I don't condone that. This is not what we had in mind with the beef segment. Did that guy just say my beef is with coworkers? Never mind. He said what I thought he said. Speaking of Lubbock, let's go to Lubbock, Texas. Terry's in Lubbock. It's good to have you, Terry. What's your beef?
I got beef with deer. They're all elusive and evasive and majestic. They're like ninjas when they're hiding from the hunters during hunting season. Here I come in my brand new pickup truck up the road, and I don't even hunt. You want to jump out in front of me like a surprise party? Thanks a lot, Bambi. Now I got to file a claim with Flo and get my rates raised, mofo. Go Bills. I'm out.
That's interesting. He said, what is it about deer, man? I've got a beef with deer. They seem like they're all graceful and majestic and beautiful. Then all of a sudden, they dart out in front of the car out of nowhere, and now I've got to file a claim with my wrecked truck. It's a deer, man. They don't know any better. I've never actually hit one, but I've had a couple of really close calls when we had that house in Montana. Ton of deer on the road, man. That was always scary, really scary, especially at night when they come out in the darkness. And it's incredible. Like, you can be going down the road 50, 55, 60 miles an hour, and a deer can still dart right in front of you. I know exactly what that guy's talking about. What's your beef? Colorado Springs, Chris. It's good to have you, Chris. What's your beef?
Hey, Jim. As a stay-at-home uncle, my beef this week is with baby clothes. Yeah, the penguins are cute, and she's totes adorbs in her little llama pajamas, but who the hell designed these things with 15 snaps on them to get them open and closed? Every time I got to change a diaper, it's like trying to reassemble my Rolex. The only proper design for these things is the zipper that starts at the feet. Thanks, Jim. I'll talk to you next week. Rack me.
My man, is there any stay-at-home uncle who has a Rolex? Is there any stay-at-home uncle who has to, quote, reassemble his Rolex? What does that mean? Why are you taking your Rolex apart? If, in fact, you have a Rolex. He is the only stay-at-home uncle that calls the program. Let's walk it off on this. We go to Austin. Oscar, good to have you. Oscar, what's your beef?
Yo, Jimbo, my beef is with TV studio analysts who go on camera wearing their $5,000 suits and ties and button-down shirts, then top off the outfit with white-soled shoes. They're basically tennis shoes. You look like your mama dressed you. Hey, Phil Simms, Boomer, James Brown, how about you mix in some leather shoes with normal leather heels and save your foamy little white Skechers for your walks through the park with your dog? Fuera.
Oscar, that's harsh, bro. Those are my guys you're talking about. Everybody's got their own sense of style, right? Are you craving some protein after a good workout? This time, don't make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and it's tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper, though, is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors: Old Fashioned, Teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy. So next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for it in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying that way. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He is Chris Beard. Chris, it is good to have you back. Listen, before we talk about the season, bring me up to date, man. How are you doing? How is life treating you these days?
Jim, Happy New Year. Life is good. I'm getting adjusted to this whole mask game. Got a good story for you, man. My mom is one of the ultimate truth tellers. She's a cancer survivor. She's tough. She tells the truth. She doesn't mess around. She'd be a great guest on your show. No fluff. Just got my mom a new iPhone. She's entered the world of cell phones and these pictures and stuff so she can see the grandkids. I sent her a picture the other day, and I'm fully masked up, and she's just like, Chris, I've never seen you look better. Like, you look unbelievable.
Great.
Jim, I'm 47. My mom has never told me I look good. I send her one picture with a mask on, and she tells me I look as well as I've ever looked. Think about that one for a minute.
Dude, I will think about that for a minute or five. I love that. That is such a great story. This is why I love you, man. I love guests who are anecdotal, and I love guests that have great stories that I don't even have to ask for. Chris, what about your mom? Like, you're a tough dude. You're a very strong-minded guy and very tough physically. But what you just said about your mother battling through cancer, like, how tough is she, and how much of your grit comes from her?
A lot of it, man. I appreciate you asking. I tell the players all the time, like, you know, you are who you surround yourself with. You know, you want to be an excuse maker, you're probably hanging out with negative people. You want to be a fighter, you're probably hanging out with tough people. And I kind of reflect from time to time, and like, what made me kind of the way I am? And a lot of it was my parents. My mom's a fighter. She, before she got cancer, her job was, she was a crosswalk walker at an elementary school. She was the lady that showed up every day, you know, and helped the kids get across the street. And even when she got first diagnosed with cancer, she continued to do her job. I was like, hey, Mom, my paycheck at Texas Tech's different than it was at McMurray. You probably don't have to work anymore. I can take care of you. And she's like, hey, Chris, this is my job. These kids are dependent on me. So that kind of stuff has probably made me who I am.
Talking to Chris Beard, you know, Chris, when you talk about, I think about these things, you know, I wonder about these things. I know you are who you roll with or who you surround yourself with. I'm kind of curious about the pandemic, because we're all dealing with this in different ways. Like, how are you different right now than when this thing started? How have you processed the pandemic and approached it? And what kind of conversations do you have with your players about it?
Yeah, what we've tried to do is basically do what we've always done, like try to be process driven and not outcome. Even way back in the summer, where we really didn't even know if we were playing the games, we said, guys, let's don't think about the games. Let's think about getting better today. Because all these guys on our team, you know, are Big 12 players. They all have aspirations of playing pro ball, some of them even in the NBA. So we've really tried to take this stance where let's control what we can control. You know, we can't control when the vaccine's coming out. We can't control what local government's going to let us do or not let us do. But what we can control is, you know, what's in our minds, what's in our hearts, working on our craft, this game we love. Kind of sounds coaching cliche, kind of sounds kind of soft, but that really is what we've done. Like, we've just tried to win each day, if that makes sense. I don't know if there's any other way you can do it when there's so much uncertainty.
We're talking to Chris Beard. He is the head basketball coach at Texas Tech. I mean, I agree with you. What else can you do but try to win that day? Now, you're coming off an 11-point win over Kansas State last night, Chris. But before the game, Terrence Shannon Jr., who had been a starter, told you that if you needed him to come off the bench, he would do that. I'm curious, what was the conversation like, and what's that say about him as a player and as a leader?
Yeah, it was a top 10 moment in my coaching career. We spent a lot of time with our team watching video of, like, Coach Popovich with the Spurs, or Belichick with the Patriots, or Nick Saban with Alabama. And we basically kind of have this idea in our locker room where we talk about it all the time, is that we're not going to be any good unless I can coach our best player really, really hard. And we've got a couple of best player type guys. TJ's one of them. So I was in the coach's locker room 10 minutes before the pregame shoot around in the morning session. TJ came in. Which is a little bit rare, because we'd lost our last game. A lot of times those coaches stay away, those players stay away from me after a loss. But TJ came in and said, look, I've been thinking about this. I'll do whatever you need me to do tonight. Start, not start, play a lot, play a little. I just want to win. And he meant it. He meant it. It wasn't one of those greased up deals where somebody put it on a platter for him and said, hey, go tell coach this. It was from his heart. And that's why we have a chance to be good. T.J. Shannon's one of the best players in college basketball, and that story is a great example of why.
We're talking to Chris Beard. You know, Chris, that point you made about how after a tough loss that guys don't always want to come around me, the win over Kansas State came after a tough overtime loss to Oklahoma State, and you've made a point that you're not a big fan of, quote, bouncing back, that that's just not the way you approach things. Lay that out for me. What do you mean by that, and what is your philosophy after a tough loss?
It was a tough loss. Foul three-point shooter, Cade Cunningham, a future NBA guy, so those take a little bit longer to digest than the other ones. You know, our deal is always, I just don't like that the player, the coach, who gets up there and says, you know, hey, we just weren't ready to play tonight, we'll bounce back. Well, I mean, what do you mean you weren't ready to play tonight? Like, it's what you get paid to do. It's what you get a scholarship to do. So, you know, the idea of bouncing back, to me, kind of infers that you weren't giving your best the game before. You know, we don't get beat around here. Sometimes we run out of time on the scoreboard, but it's a mentality where you're not going to beat us. And Oklahoma State, you know, I didn't think we lost the game. I just thought the buzzer went off and we didn't have a chance to score the next basket. Bounce back quickly, mentality instead of how
I
do.
I like that. Chris, joining us. And you and I have talked about this in the past, but you look at the Big 12, man, it is an absolute meat grinder every single night. So when you talk about mentality, what does it take from a mental and a physical standpoint to play in that conference night in and night out and make sure that you are ready night in and night out?
Yeah, it's brutal. I remember when we got the job at Texas Tech, we're flying across the country and the reality kind of sets in. You start thinking, man, this is going to be pretty cool. Then you start thinking, man, how are we going to beat Bill Self, Lon Kruger, Bob Huggins, Scott Drew, and these guys? And when I get into those kind of dark places, I just start recruiting, you know. Instead of worrying about it, I just pick up the phone and call the next, you know, Jared Culver that we're recruiting. But no, this league is it's brutal. They all are. What makes this one special is it's a true round robin. You know, 10 schools in the Big 12. Don't really understand why we're called the Big 12, but I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but 10 schools in the Big 12, and then, you know, we play everybody twice every year, home and away, and the coaching in this league is sick. Like, speaking of coaches, Jim, we got to get Bob Huggins in the Hall of Fame. What's your take on that?
I love Hug. I'm a huge, huge Hug guy. I've always loved Hug. I think that Hug should be in the Hall of Fame. And, I mean, if not Hug, then why or who? Where do you come out? Why do you think that – is that an issue for you? Do you think that might not happen?
I mean, it's ridiculous that he's not in already. Like, to me, he's like – I'll tell you what a lot of people don't know is he's the best coach of coaches. Like, you can beat him in a close game or he beats you, and it's the exact same handshake. It's the exact same text message. I mean, the guy is real as real gets. And I mean, think about this. I have a picture of Bob Huggins in my office, and I coach in the same league as him.
So, right. It's amazing.
It's almost like kind of a weird man crush. The guy to me, is everything good about coaching. And, I mean, he should have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago. Hopefully this time they get it right. But he's the best.
I there's so many great things about that response, Chris. The fact that you've got a picture of that guy in your office and you go against him and the two of you are trying to beat the hell out of each other. I mean, are coaches – I mean, you can't paint everybody with one broad stroke, but how unusual is that? I mean, it is so competitive and so ruthless and so cutthroat. What's that say about a guy like that, that he's willing to help other coaches, younger coaches?
I think it says that he loves the game above all. You know, any team, any player, he loves the game, like the game of basketball. And you know, when I grew up coaching in small college, it was a little bit different. You know, when you drive 12 hours, you're on a bus, you'll meet with the coach the night before the game and have a beer with the guy you're going to play with the next day. At this level, I think just because of the money and the pressure and all that, it doesn't happen a lot, but it still does. Like when we played in the Elite Eight against Jay Wright and Villanova, I'm sitting there in the locker room, you know, in kind of that awkward time, like 10 minutes before the game. Everybody's out there warming up. As a head coach, I guess you can't go out there and watch your guys. Somebody wrote that kind of unwritten rule, so you're kind of sitting back there being Johnny Coach, but there's nothing really to do in the locker room 10 minutes before the game. So I'm thinking about it, and I was like, dude, I'm just going to go down there and meet Jay Wright. So I go down the hallway, and Villanova's locker room's there, and some guy's outside the room, like a coach or a security or manager. So I say, can I talk to Coach Wright? And he looked at me like, well, you know, who are you? That's why I'm about to coach against you. So anyway, long story short, Jay Wright came out. He kind of like puzzled that I was there, and I introduced myself to him. And at the end, he's like, Chris, this is pretty cool you came down here. This is what it used to be like. Coaches used to kind of talk. He goes, hey, you've done a great job with your team. Let's connect. And so, you know, we lost that tough two-possession game to them. They went on to win the national championship. But since then, I've got a good friendship with Coach Wright. I can call him from time to time and ask him about basketball stuff, but But there used to be that. Coach Knight would talk about that's the way coaching used to be. Now I think just because of the money and the stress and the business, there's not a lot of it, but it still exists.
We're talking to Chris Beard. You know, Chris, it seems to me like when you tell that story, if somebody were jaded or somebody were cynic or somebody were skeptical, they might say, come on, man. He's looking. It's gamesmanship, man. He's looking to get an edge. Chris Beard wants to win. I don't think that at all, man. I think that you really do appreciate guys like that. You appreciate being in the fraternity. What's it mean to you to be in that fraternity?
It's just cool to be in the room. You know, I never thought I'd be in the room. I thought I'd be the guy buying the books and reading it. I still buy the books. I still read about them, but I actually know these people that, you know, that I'm reading about. So it's just been awesome. It gets back to the Coach Huggins deal, just the love of the game. The game is bigger than all of us. And if you treat the game right, you know, amazing things will happen. And certainly our story at Texas Tech is one of those. We've been really fortunate.
Talking to Chris Beard. Chris, one more thing about the way you came up. In fact, you're not going to make it about you per se, but you beat Incarnate Word, which is where you were a graduate assistant back in the 90s. I mean, when you think back on those days, you and I have talked about the way you came up, but when you think back on those days and then where you are right now, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Just been a heck of a journey. You know, like I tell the players, enjoy the journey, not the destination. And it's really true. I wish that I would have enjoyed it a little bit more, but I do think I probably enjoyed it a little bit more than the next guy. You know, I think, you know, that ball tips up, whether it's, you know, Texas Tech, Kansas for the Big 12 championship or Texas Tech, Virginia for the national championship. The feelings you had right before that game, they're the same when we were playing Incarnate Word trying to beat St. Mary's, or we were at Angelo State trying to beat Tarleton. It's, you know, it's the game. And I'm proud of the way that we grew up. And the guys on our staff, too. We got a lot of guys on our staff that have grinded it up through the lower ranks, too. So it's just kind of who we are.
Hey Chris, listen, I know you're about ball. You're about doing the work. You're about doing the preparation necessary to get your team ready. I also know that you got into Breaking Bad a while back, and then you designated Survivor during the pandemic. You have never been a big TV guy. What was it like to watch TV during the shutdown?
Well, it was cool. Like, first of all, like I was telling Randy, my fiance, where are the commercials? And she's looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, there are no commercials. So, but that's when I used to get up and take a piss or go get a beer, you know. So you got to have one of these remotes now where you pause it, you know, because you get no commercial, you got no break. So that's the first thing. The Breaking Bad still, man. I mean, I like them all, like the Tombstone, all this stuff. What's the Kevin Costner? It's not Tombstone. It's Yellowstone.
Right.
I like all these things. But to me, still the best is Breaking Bad. Like I feel like I knew Walt, man. Like, Walt is kind of broken down, and then he went and made it happen, and he found himself in a world of problems. But I always kind of respected Walt because the whole thing started. He's just trying to provide for his family, man.
I think that's incredible. Like, where's the commercial, man? I need to hit the refrigerator or the head. And Randy's like, there aren't commercials, man. This is content. This is like programming on demand. So do you guys have any kind of issues agreeing on the same shows, or do you guys like the same things when it comes to watching TV?
I mean, no issue publicly, because I just go ahead and do whatever she wants, you know. Like,
smart.
This will be marriage number two, trying to figure it out, you know. And I think the bottom line is, like, you just do whatever they want is my understanding of how it works. Do you have any different advice for me?
Man, that's smart. Chris, I've told the story before, but the first time I ever heard the phrase, happy wife, happy life, it was none other than Larry Brown who told me that back in the day. Happy wife, happy life. It's good advice, right?
I'm bored today. I'll put that on our coach's board today.
You should. He is the head basketball coach at Texas Tech. He's in his fifth season with the Red Raiders. He is an extremely good friend of the program. Chris, I appreciate you, man. It's so good to have you back. So good to hear your voice, and really good to have you on, as always. I appreciate you.
Happy New Year, brother.
So there's this video. You've probably seen it. It's around right now. It did drop a few days back on the internet. It features one of the most amazing exchanges you're ever going to hear between a delivery driver and a customer. I mean, it's baffling. It's really baffling. And there's some unbelievable entitlement coming from the driver. So much so that it seems fake. Except it's not. It's not fabricated. Like, it really went down. The best actors in the world could not pull off these two roles. The greatest writers in the world could not dream up this dialogue. Thankfully for us, it's all captured on tape in pretty decent video quality. Now, I've got the audio for you. Let me take you through the viral sensation of this particular week. But first, you do need to know a few things. For context, the first is DoorDash. DoorDash is one of the leading food delivery apps right alongside Postmates and Uber Eats. Like, I've used all three. 5 years ago, pizza places were the only restaurants, pretty much, that would drive your grub to your home. But that all changed because there are half a dozen companies that now will go to any joint, seemingly, and grab whatever you ordered from wherever you ordered it. I mean, seriously, if sitting in a drive-thru is too much work for you now, you can pay somebody to do it on your behalf. I mean, sure, your $5 stoner munchies from Taco Bell will come out to be like 30 bucks after fees and a tip, but you'd be surprised how many people will pay for the luxury of cold, soggy fast food brought to them by an absolute stranger, especially in a pandemic. Particularly in a pandemic. You don't believe me? 50 million Americans ordered off a food delivery app last year. More than 1 in 5 people in this country have a delivery app on their phone. So it's a thing. It's a real thing and it's a big thing. Now, the other bit of context that you need is that a lot of homeowners now and renters have installed doorbells that also double as security cameras. They record audio and video at all times. These doorbells have captured would-be burglars, porch pirates, and roaming animals, and the occasional Amazon driver who slips and falls on ice and then gets laughed out by the entire internet. So, when I tell you that there's sound that I'm about to play and that it's of a DoorDash driver and a customer having a conversation with the customer recording it through a high-tech doorbell, you know exactly what I mean, right? You probably have one of those things. So check this out. There's your context. There's your background. The first voice you're going to hear is the customer, the homeowner, speaking through his doorbell, telling the DoorDash driver she can just leave the food on the doorstep and he will come and get it. Remember, all the payments and the tips are taken care of ahead of time on the app. There is no exchange of money at the door. Here is the first part of the interaction.
You can leave it, thank you.
No, I could speak to you, actually.
I'm sorry?
I need to speak to you. I don't think you realize where they're coming from, so I need to speak to you.
Where what's coming from?
Where the food you ordered is coming from. I don't think you realize the distance that it's come from, because then you would never actually have given what you give. So I think you can come and see face-to-face.
All right, so fireworks right off the bat. The driver refusing to leave the food, which is already paid for, and demanding that the customer come out of his house and have a face-to-face conversation to discuss how far away the restaurant was from his house. Like, in other words, she's like, you can come out here and explain to me why you tip me the way you tip me, because I need to explain to you how far I had to come to drop your food off. I mean, she's implying it. Like, you have no idea how far I had to drive. And if you did know how far I had to drive, and you and I are going to talk about this now, if you knew, you would have given me a much better tip. I mean, she literally, right from the jump, is on this guy. So that's a great start. But then it gets better.
Because I drove 40 minutes, and it was extremely far, and I got it to you early. So I don't think you realize where you work from.
I don't understand. You took 40 minutes from where?
From the restaurant that you ordered from. Do you realize how far it is? Do you realize you ordered from Carmack and you're in Smithtown?
That's a 15, 20-minute drive.
It's not. You need to try to drive it. I just drove it. It's 40 minutes. It's 12 and a half miles.
Dude, how brass is this gal? I mean, you want to talk about some gonad. Like, she's right there screaming into his doorbell. I mean, is this real life? Is that delivery driver really scolding a customer and telling him how far the restaurant was and demanding to speak to him about it face to face? Yes, yes, and yes, she is. Unfortunately for her, we live in the age of information, meaning it's not that hard for anybody with an internet connection to connect the dots and check the facts. Yes, you just heard her claim that she drove 12 and a half miles and that it took her 40 minutes. First off, that is not the customer's problem at all. Secondly, Commack, New York to Smithtown, New York is a, look, I've got friends in New York. I've got people who work on this show in New York. They could tell you much better than I could. I just looked it up myself, but they could tell you that's not a 5.5 mile drive. I mean, it's not 12 and a half. It's 5.5. That's a 5.5 mile drive, not the 12 and a half mile drive that she said. And while she says it takes 40 minutes, Google Maps says it takes 14. I don't know. Maybe she hit traffic, or maybe she walked, or maybe she took the back roads. Either way, none of this is on the customer. It's not his fault. She sucks at her job. However, she's upset now. She's upset that he had the audacity to order food off of an app that she works for, and that she accepted that job when it popped up on her phone. But she's not done. Oh, no, there's more.
So why do you accept the pickup if you think it's that far?
I don't let us know how far.
So she kind of talks over him at the beginning. But if you listen, the customer asks, why did you accept the pickup if you think it's so far? I mean, such a good question, right? And she answers with, quote, DoorDash doesn't let us know how far the deliveries are before accepting them.
So why do you accept the pickup if you think it's that far?
They don't let us know how far.
Again, an easy thing to fact check. And again, she was lying, because DoorDash does let every driver know how far delivery is before accepting it. SOP. SOP. Standard operating procedure. Strike two, ma'am. And now she's 0-2, she's in trouble, and for the grand finale.
So I think you need to adjust your tip to make it right.
How much is the tip?
You gave an $8 tip.
What the hell are you looking for? I gave an $8.
Okay, I'm going to bring the food back. I'm going to bring the food back. Okay.
Strike three. GTFOH. She said, you need to give me a bigger tip. He said, what the hell for? I gave you up. The entire impetus of his anger is not good enough for the job completed. A job that's completed. Never mind, it was the job. And the job was not nearly half as grueling as she made it out to be. But she's bent over an $8 tip. Now, to be fair, I don't know what the bill was, but do some math right here. $8 sounds like a pretty good tip. I mean, I generally overtip because there are enough people taking enough runs at me that I don't want to be called a cheapskate. So I always overtip because I appreciate the service industry. So I probably would have given her what she wanted unless she gave me that attitude, then probably not. But in this case, $8 is a pretty good tip, right? Especially for a 6 mile drive. Not the greatest tip ever. That's not one of those celebrities that in the year 2020 drops $2,020 on some waitress who's just grinding out. But $8 for that woman to do what she did is not a bad tip at all. Remember, she's not a server. She's driving a bag from point A to point B. She got $8 for it on top of her wages earned from DoorDash. Listen again as the guy laughs when she reminds him of the tip itself.
How much is the tip?
You gave an $8 tip.
What the hell are you looking for? I gave an $8.
Okay, I'm going to bring the food back. I'm going to bring the food back. Okay.
Okay, so we're missing one really important part of this, right? So he literally laughs at her. Like, what the hell are you looking for? It's $8, man. What do you want, 80? What do you want, 800? But then she dips. She literally repos the food, and it's all on video. You heard her. She said, all right, I'm going to take the food back. She takes prepaid, not pre-made, prepaid food. He paid for the food already. He tipped her for it already. And she takes the food. Food that was prepaid for, food that she got tipped on, and she walked it right back to her car. And you heard her threaten to take it back to the restaurant. Now play that out for a second. Imagine her walking that food back into the restaurant. What the hell are they going to do with it? What are they going to want with that food? Hey, yo, I drove this back to you because the guy who ordered it did not believe me that my 15-minute, 6-mile drive was a 40-minute, 13-mile drive, and he tried to give me $8. I mean, who is going to have her back on that? Not the customer, not the restaurant, not her employer, not DoorDash, not the internet, not me, not you. Hey, lady, you don't get to lie multiple times about a delivery, demand to see somebody face-to-face in a pandemic, and then chastise them and scold them for the tip, which is a pretty good tip, and then repo their food like a tow truck driver. That's not how this thing works. Speaking of not working, probably safe to say you're not going to be working for DoorDash much longer. The idea is to bring people their food, not get caught on camera, leaving with it and lying to them and demanding a better tip. But least of all, at least with your newfound free time, you can probably listen back to how incredibly misguided and entitled that you are and sound, because everybody else is, and now you're famous. I'll give you that. You're famous. For all the wrong reasons, but you are famous.
You can leave it. Thank you.
No, I could speak to you, actually.
I'm sorry?
To speak to you. I don't think you realize where they're coming from, so I need to speak to you.
Where what's coming from?
Where the food you ordered is coming from. I don't think you realize the distance that it's come from, because then you would never actually have given what you give. So I think you can come and see me face to face. Because I drove 40 minutes. I drove 40 minutes, and it was extremely far, and I got it to you early. So I don't think you realize where you ordered from.
I don't understand. From where?
From the restaurant that you ordered from. Do you realize how far it is? Do you realize you ordered from Carmack and you're in Smithtown?
That's a 15, 20-minute drive.
It's not. You need to try to drive it. I just drove it. It's 40 minutes. It's 12 and a half miles.
So what do you expect to pick up if you think it's that far?
They don't let us know how far, so I think you need to adjust your tip to make it right.
How much is the tip?
You gave an $8 tip.
What the hell are you looking for? I gave an $8.
Okay, I'm going to bring the food back. I'm going to bring the food back. Okay.
Is she f***ing kidding?
$8? That's a lot.
40 minutes it took her to get her?
Okay. That's the husband and wife talking at the very end. Nice little bonus. Is she bleeping kidding? $8, that's a lot. 40 minutes. He's like, it took you 15 to 20, maybe. She's like, that's it. That's it. I'm out. Adjust your tip or I'm taking the food back. Absolutely incredible.
Good night now.